from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, are you miserable? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Here's what's happening. Last month, Yahoo started notifying people that it had discovered yet another account breach. Apparently, a forged cookie attack had been used to access a number of accounts over the past couple of years. At that time, it wasn't known how many accounts had been accessed, but now we know it's in the millions. And remember, Yahoo already admitted over a billion accounts compromised in August of 2013. That was followed by a further 500 million accounts being accessed in 2014. This latest breach is a mere 32 million accounts. The threat to U.S. airports from terror groups such as Al-Qaeda and Islamic State expected to grow because of the instability in parts of the Middle East and Asia. The focus on fighting Islamic State, also known as ISIS, has now allowed Al-Qaeda and its offshoots to rebound in countries including Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan. At the same time, as Islamic State loses territory in Syria and Iraq, the tens of thousands of its fighters who poured in from other countries are leaving. Some will try to infiltrate into the U.S. Snapchat shares close on their first day of trading up 44%. Wow! Quenching a long drought in the market for tech IPOs. More than 200 million shares, the entire size of the offering, changed hands over the course of the day, accounting for roughly 10% of the total volume of trading on the New York Stock Exchange. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Michael Shedlock. Mish, what a day for Snapchat. How does this happen?
Absolutely. Quite amazing, George. First off, I apologize for the bad connection here. I'm in the middle of the California desert, Anza-Borrego Desert State Park, where we've had lots of spring rains. The wildflowers are going to pop in the next week or two. I'm here trying to catch that. Snapchat, my gosh, up 44%. Market cap, $33-35 billion. This is a company with very few employees. They became instant mega multi-millionaires. CEO might even be worth $1 billion after this IPO.
Easy.
George,
wow.
It's crazy. They lost money last.
And what Snapchat does is it sends little videos and things like that to users, right? To your friends and family members and things like that. It's amazing. I don't know where they generate the advertising money, Mish, on something like that.
I don't believe they do. I don't think Google does, but I don't think Facebook does. I do not think Twitter does. I mean, this thing surged well beyond the market cap there of Twitter on the opening day.
It's crazy.
Let's step back, George, here for 1 second here. Within the last couple of days, the Dow has blasted past,
21,000, came back down a little bit today.
A little bit today, but if we look at smooth PEs, a 10-year average of PEs, this stock market right now is more overvalued at any time in history. It passed 1929. That is how crazy stock market valuations are. And we've not taken out the dot-com bubble in 2000 yet, but that was sort of an isolated technology bubble.
Well, that's exactly right, Mish. But we're going to see what happens to that bubble. Had a lot of people on this program predicting that bubble is going to burst. And thanks, Mish. Go back to the desert, my friend. We'll talk to you when you get back to wherever you may be. Dozens of students in one Minnesota school district ordered out of class today. The Rochester School District says 71 students failed to provide documentation that shows that they had received their vaccines. The Rochester Public School Board members voted just a week ago to enforce a state law that requires students to be immunized or be officially exempt for reasons such as health or religion. Students had to submit the proper paperwork to the school district in order to prove they were exempt by Wednesday, and these 71 students apparently did not. A distressing video showing hunted dolphins are vomiting from stress as they try to escape capture. The video comes from Japan and shows the captors trapping the creatures and trying to remove them from the sea. The scared animals are mishandled by swimmers in wetsuits as they try to flee. And then they barf, almost like people. I thought we'd bring in our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, author of Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Peter, these dolphins are like people, but why does stress do things like that to people?
Well, George, I have no idea why dolphins vomit when they're stressed, but they sure are like people. They have large brains. They communicate a lot with each other. They protect each other. They'll gang up on sharks to protect each other. They are a very higher mammal, not a fish, obviously. And, I mean, one of the lessons is, once again, that there are reasons creatures get upset. You know, we keep hearing people get depressed because of biochemical imbalances. Mm-hmm. They have genetic causes for getting depressed and upset. And in fact, everything we look at tells us that just like the dolphins, human beings get upset when they feel trapped, when they feel like they're being caught, which makes them feel, us human beings feel horribly depressed and horribly anxious, depending on you know, how we've learned to respond to these stresses. So the story to me is about folks. You know, if you're feeling terribly distressed and very, very unhappy, don't get a psychiatric drug. It's not true that you have a biochemical imbalance. It's true that you're like a dolphin being hunted and caught in the net. You need to figure out how you can change your life and how you can get new and better attitudes that enable you to swim free.
Good advice, Peter. Peter is his website, Breggin, BREGGIN.com. The late Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch is back on the market with an asking price of $67 million. They did want $100 million. No takers yet. Up next, Future Smart, managing the game-changing trends that will transform your world. Dr. James Canton joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. It's called Future Smart. Now, I'm going to tell you about our guest here, Dr. James Canton, PhD, global futurist, social scientist, visionary business advisor. He is the CEO and chairman of the Institute for Global Futures. Now, that is a think tank that advises Fortune 100 companies and governments on future trends, innovation, strategy, and global risk. Now, previously, he was an executive at Apple Computer, a founding board member of the Singularity University, a digital entrepreneur, and an advisor to three White House administrations. And here he is on Coast to Coast. He was on with us on the program about 2 years ago almost, James. Welcome back.
Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
I have got to ask you about Snapchat. When you talk about digital entrepreneur, which is what you are, and what's happening in terms of trends, this is almost unbelievable to me. Why the euphoria over this, James?
Well, I think people are looking for the next new thing. And if that next new thing is kind of sexy and got media about it and it's tied to the internet and they've built up a demand, a mysterious demand, that fits the formula for, well, it must be something fantastic. So there's enough folks out there who would like to take a ride, and as we see in the growth of the stock, I think it's paying off for them.
Now, does it get old after a while? Do people say, my God, you know, we bought the glitz and glamour, but there's nothing else here?
Well, it all depends how long your patience is. A lot of people who bought in at 17 or 18, you know, got out at $20 and made plenty of money.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to hold, you know, buy and hold. A lot of folks bought and moved on, and there are new folks that came in, and they're looking for even a higher number in terms of the stock value. So, again, it's a large marketplace out there, and with the economy doing well and the global economy doing well, well, quite frankly, I think you're going to see the IPO market return with a thunderous acclaim.
All right, tell me about Future Smart. It's a great title. It means a lot, and we're all involved in this.
Well, Future Smart is based on the notion that we all need to get Future Smart. We need to become faster adapters and predictors of what's coming next. We're surrounded by trends such as disruptive technologies, the internet, analytics, artificial intelligence, robotics, drones, you name it. There's new technologies that are really changing our world. Will robots replace workers? Will we replace robots maybe someday? So we're facing a world where we've got to develop new capabilities, and a big part of it is developing what I call predictive awareness. If you read the book, you'll find out what's coming next, and maybe you'll be able to become future smart, adaptive, and predictive, so you can navigate the changes, the disruptions that are coming in the marketplace and our society.
What is driving this push, this future smart, James? Is it the computer? Is it just know-how from us as human beings? What's pushing it? What's steering it?
Well, it's a convergence of trends. So as a futurist, I'm in the business of forecasting what's coming next, and it's a group of trends. One trend certainly is disruptive technology. We're looking at the collapse of what we call Moore's Law, which is every technology, computers, robotics, you know, biotech, nanotech, every technology is really doubling in power every 8 to 12 months. And at that same period of time, the technology cost for that power is decreasing by 50%. So, you know, the exponential changes of very fast, very smart, very cheap technology, which is changing healthcare, changing transportation, changing our very society and work. Well, quite frankly, it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's creating great opportunities for new jobs, new categories, new businesses, startups, transforming governments even. On the other side, we're challenging fundamental assumptions such as what people do for work, what kind of lifestyles we have. So part of it is technology. Part of it is just demographics. You know, we're talking about another couple of 2 to 3 billion people joining us on the planet between now and 2050. You know, we're not doing a great job right now feeding the 7 billion people on the planet. So demographic changes, of course, you know, immigration, what's going on with security. We're facing existential threats from ISIS, from the hacking of news, from state actors like Russia, from China. So a combination of trends together. I've named three of them, you know, security, collision of cultures, an increase in population, dramatic increase, our ability to manage the planet, and of course, disruptive technologies that are really creating both opportunity as well as challenge, even threat.
And let's go through this, because you do a great job in Future Smart to break down various categories of things that affect all of us through climate change, medical advances, and we'll go through all of those tonight with you, James, and get your thoughts on them. What is the one thing that you think has truly been the catalyst for all this kind of change?
Well, I think I'd have to say it's technology, the onslaught of smart, portable technology. You know, you think about, you know, your cell phone today has more technology, has more power in that handheld supercomputer than existed in the entire world before, you know, 1980. I mean, really, people take for granted the internet is a marketplace for entrepreneurs and for companies and people who want to, you know, really share ideas and even manipulate ideas. So when you think about the internet, mobile technology, artificial intelligence, robotics, things that were science fiction even 5-10 years ago, now are science fact. And it's not just these interesting devices. No. We're talking about changing the fundamental nature of work. I mean, robots are being used in automation to replace fundamental jobs. Your x-rays are being, you know, read by robots and artificial intelligence. We're diagnosing cancer and developing treatment plans with artificial intelligence. We're talking about self-driving cars that, you know, quite frankly, most people didn't realize that there's self-driving cars, you know, that are automated on the roads today. What's happened in the past even 24 months is smart aware technology brought to us by the ubiquitous nature of the internet, meaning it's every place, has really changed the game of our society. Think about the fake news that's going on right now.
Oh,
the ability of a nation state to manipulate an election. Who would have even conceptualized that? I call it reality hacking. We're beginning to understand that the technologies are really driving changes that we don't understand, and these changes may not all be positive.
Yet so many people, when they read this stuff on the internet specifically, they believe it.
That's right. And, you know, there's the blurring of lines between truth and what's now become known as fake news and fake information. You know, that blurring, it continues. We may be in an era where we're in the midst of a kind of information warfare that, you know, that assaults us and tries to influence us around a variety of motivations. They may be about elections, they may be about policy issues, they may be about even what we believe about our own history. So this is a very interesting time, of which the biggest, if you will, driver of change is emerging smart, intelligent technology.
We're with Dr. James Canton, his book, Future Smart, his previous book, The Extreme Future, when he was on with us a couple of years ago. We're going to take these categories and go through them. Let's first talk about, as you call, regenerative medicine, the ability to predict and prevent illnesses, rebuilding brains, bodies. We've seen over our lifetimes, James, the human lifespan increase, but you're talking about a dramatic increase, aren't you?
I am. Right now, the convergence of healthcare with genomics, you know, mapping the human genome, it cost about $30 million to map the first genome. Now it costs, you know, under $1,000. So, you know, genomics has really transformed. I mean, none of us really know. So one thing we share, whether you're worth $1 billion or you're poor or middle class, you know, we all share a common destiny, which is to not know when we're going to get sick and when we're going to die. Now, I'm going to forecast on this show and tell you right now for your listeners, we will, in our lifetimes right now, we will have a predictive profile of when we may get ill, the ability to be able to actually interdict or even prevent that illness, and maybe even when we may, how long we may live. And I know that's going to sound like, you know, science fiction to some folks, but very quickly we are moving towards this whole area of early diagnostics. And quite frankly, that cell phone that's in your hand may end up being the diagnostic tool that ends up helping you, maybe save your life,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even predict and identify a disease. So very shortly, you're going to be giving choices. The biggest marketplace in the near future is really this, what I call the health enhancement and human enhancement marketplace. People will have choices. We have choices today. You can actually choose the sex of your child. You can decide and choose certain kinds of attributes that you would like to have, not only, you know, for your children in the future, but even for yourself. We will get coupons for a new organ that will be produced by a 3D printer over the next few years, because we will know when and be able to predict when you may have a failure of a organ or even a disease that we might be able to predict and maybe even try to manage the outcome to give us greater longevity. You know, we're really at the edge of, on one hand, the end of medicine, and the other hand, the development of an entirely new kind of medicine.
A new kind, yeah.
Regenerative medicine. Where we'll be, you know, animals, we have different kinds of reptiles are able to regenerate their limbs.
Or, you know, crab can regrow their claws. Lobsters can.
That's right. So the notion of mimicking, we call that biomimicry, being able to mimic nature's actions to be able to actually replicate and to restore and self-heal, we have a certain amount of that going on in our bodies today, but you know, I think over the next really 5 to 10 years, there'll be dramatic breakthroughs that will extend lifetimes. I'm looking at an average lifetime within, I would say, 10 years, 120 to 100 and even 50.
Oh, my gosh. Let's talk about that, James. You're going to take a quick break because what quality of life will you have if you live to be 150? I want to get your take on that and so much more. Future Smart next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Dr. James Canton with us, his work called Future Smart. James, so if you can get the human lifespan to 120 or 150, first question, are we going to look that way or are we going to look much younger?
Well, that's going to be the challenge. The ability to be able to live longer is really useless unless we have a certain degree of agility.
That's
right.
We have
a certain degree of wellness. We have a mobility, and we have, let's say, a mature but youthful look. I think this is where certainly plastic surgery, stem cells, but let me just pose, there's new technology that's being developed around regeneration that I would forecast that will be emerging over the next, you know, 5 to even 10 years and maybe even sooner. Research is going on right now in the labs, and it has to do with new kinds of technologies of harnessing light and new therapies that are associated with light. And I think that, you know, the use of photonics, the use of triggering regenerative, let's say, genes, but also even parts of the brain, the ability to refresh the brain. And let me tell you how this is going to occur.
Sure.
You know, we have over 100 companies right now that are working feverishly to try to, you know, defeat Alzheimer's, if you will. Alzheimer's is going to be the biggest challenge facing our civilization. Well, as we begin to, you know, map, we have an Alzheimer's gene, but as we begin to develop a predictive capability and identify early Alzheimer's, there will also be, we hope, the drugs and devices and procedures to be able to both identify and manage and turn off those genes, turn off those particular disease-driving entities around senility and Alzheimer's. So that's going to be very critical, but the outcome of that is going to be a new kind of genomic medicine that will actually enhance, we call them cognoceuticals, that will actually enhance our memory. So on one hand, we're going to defeat, if you will, diseases in many regards, not all of them, but defeat them the way we've somewhat defeated cardiovascular disease and will defeat diabetes, but more importantly, refreshing the brain. This is going to be the big challenge of the 21st, 22nd centuries, and I believe that this new era of cognoceuticals that are designed to be able to not just, you know, prevent or heal our mental issues associated with senility and growing older, but actually enhance our intelligence, enhance our cognitive awareness. You know, nobody's really ready for this future of health enhancement, but that's what's going to be coming, and it's going to be very exciting.
It really is. I mean, one of our clients, you just heard, HealthyLooking.com, they use stem cell technology for your face, and developed by a doctor here in Beverly Hills, California, who is a dermatologist, and he felt that stem cell technology was the way to go, and they are really making inroads into that kind of technology.
Absolutely. You know, stem cells are adult stem cells, which have the ability to be able to regenerate, if you will, and that's the right word, almost any organ, almost any kind of tissue. We're still fairly early in that game, but, you know, when you think about the entire body, the entire brain, all of our cells in our body have, I believe, the catalyst for regeneration. We just haven't been able to unlock that, and we don't have yet the medicine to be able to do it. Stem cells are the beginning of that, the vanguard of regeneration. But I would forecast that as we begin to move forward, we're going to be able to map the parts of the brain, which is really, you know, the kind of the computer control center for the body. where we'll be able to refresh the heart. We'll be able to, you know, re-engineer even organs. Now part of that will be done through this kind of targeting genes and the signaling and prevent certain kinds of dysfunctionality and understand the aging components of cells and organs. Another part of that will be actually a bio-enhancement where we'll be growing organs that we're going to need at some point. We're going to replace retinas so we can see. We're going to restore the youthful look as such. You know, keep in mind, the vanity of humanity will be fully actualized in the near future where, you know, plastic surgery will meet regeneration and things like synthetic biology, which people have vast new choices. And I think those choices, in many regards, will be happening around the world. They may not be happening here until we kind of get the FDA.
That's right. Good point.
Ready and accelerated. But, you know, there's a lot of treatments around the world. You know, I have clients in Bumrungrad Hospital is one of the leading, it's the largest private hospital in Bangkok that's been on the forefront of wellness and medical treatments, and they have a regeneration center there. And, you know, I'm very impressed with, you know, it's a world market. We call it medical tourism. Well, I have a new term for you that I'm going to introduce tonight just for your listeners.
Here we go.
You ready? It's the regeneration tourist. You want to regenerate yourself. Well, guess what? You're going to be a regeneration tourist. Look around the world. There's lots of folks that are experimenting, that are developing clinics, and, you know, your next vacation, you may want to take off 10 years and restore your vitality. And let me just say, that's really critically important. We're not just talking about looking better. This is not just cosmetic. This is about regenerating cells, regenerating organs, regenerating bones, giving people agility to be able to not be, you know, stuck in a bed or stuck in a wheelchair or to have dysfunctionality through either, you know, senility or Alzheimer's or other kind of diseases. You know, we want to get to the other side of that, you know, cross the Rubicon. That's what's so exciting about this convergence of emerging technologies that will give us a longevity medicine, which, you know, doesn't exist yet, but we're on our way.
Well, they better get Social Security fixed too, James, because if people are going to live that long and be healthy, boy, they better catch up with that, huh?
Well, absolutely, and to your point, governments, I've actually been advising and working with governments because there are going to be new policies to be able to understand. We need new strategies, you know, for societies living well beyond, you know, 100. You know, what are the new policies to be able to give them, to endure them? And, you know, we're looking at everything from guaranteed income to be able to, you know, move around economies to be able to sustain, you know, future populations that will be living longer. And think about the wisdom. Think about the ability to be able to, we have so much wisdom that's lost when even one individual has died. Imagine being able to have, you know, populate artificial intelligences that will be able to capture information and pass that on to the next generation. But the very fact that we'll have seniors will be able to be agile in mind, body, and spirit. So when you're 90 or 100, you won't be ravaged by aging and disease. I think that's the future we're headed towards, and I think it's an exciting one that will, you know, again, it's going to be a little complicated because on one hand, you're going to have rising population. On the other hand, you're going to have, you know, aging societies, and then we're going to have this kind of health, this regenerative health enhancement society at the same time. So there's going to be a lot of choices. Not everybody is going to want to age the same way. Not everybody's going to want to live well beyond 100. And I call them the naturals and the enhancers. You're going to have some folks that are, you know, 70, 80, 90 years old is a good run, and they're going to just, you know, end life as it comes. They're
sure.
The natural. And well, then you'll have the enhancers. And those say, you know, I'd like a little bit more. You know, I'd like to see my great-grandchildren, or I'd like to contribute to society. I'd like to have that second or third or even fourth career. I like to try my, you know, at maybe, you know, making the world a better world and maybe, you know, pitching in. I've had a good run. I'd like to contribute to others. Imagine people having not one lifetime, but maybe two or three lifetimes. That's what this is going to do. It's not going to be for everybody, but I think the enhancers will represent almost a subculture of folks around the world. I mean, you know, for centuries there have been talk about immortals that live amongst us. Imagine potentially immortals that we know of and are contributing back to society and, you know, kind of make helping us tackle some of the biggest challenges that face our civilization.
What about jobs in the future with this kind of future smart technology? What happens to the jobs?
Well, I think that, you know, we've been so focused on jobs going away or robots taking our jobs or, you know, artificial intelligence, and there will be some jobs that will go away. I mean, I think that truck drivers are going to be competing with self-driving cars. So there are some jobs. So let me just suggest that there will be also just thousands of new kinds of jobs. For instance, virtual reality, which is, you know, beginning. It's the next generation of really TV and movies where you can enter these virtual realities and interact and sense, feel, touch, and have, you know, very immersive kind of experiences. Instead of just going to Disney World, you can be in a virtual reality. Well, who's going to design those worlds? Well, you're going to have a whole new category of 10 to 20 jobs of virtual reality designers and system integrators for virtual reality and telepresence engineers, and you're going to have virtual reality technicians that prepare people for these explorations and journeys. It's going to be very exciting. So in each of these technology areas, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, robotics, regenerative medicine, even climate change and geoengineering, you know, how we're going to deal with climate change, we'll talk a little bit more about that, you're going to have within each of them about, you know, 100 new job categories, quite frankly, that haven't been invented yet. Just hold on. The future's coming.
So it's exciting, you think?
Absolutely. I'm not utopian and I'm not dystopian. I'm very practical and realistic. Look around you. Look where the jobs are today. You know, we look at data science and we look at cloud and we look at, you know, the nature of work and workplace is changing. But at the same time, what do we have? You know, we've got traditional energy sources, petroleum sources with alternative energy side by side. You've got, you know, malls and retail stores and the internet for buying. You know, we've got the small screen with Netflix and web shows and Amazon, and you've got movies, and you've got cable, and you've got TV, traditional TV. So you know, this is going to be a world of many choices and many opportunities. And the question is, quite frankly, I mean, in this economy right now, we've not been able to fill over 1 million jobs because of the skills that are necessary. And many of them are knowledge jobs. So tomorrow's jobs, we're going to need to retrain people, re-educate them, and change education to get people ready for this future smart world where we're going to need people with a lot more skills around not just technology, but how do you create and think about work differently? You think about it. I mean, there used to be, when you wanted to market a product, you think about it, you go ahead and just be on, you know, the radio or TV or send out flyers, or now we think about email. All that's changed with social media. All that's changed with mobile technology. What happens next when, let's think about space. Space is going to, we're going to go off-world. We're going to go to asteroids.
That's going to happen, sure.
This is going to be very exciting. We don't have the people trained. How many universities are training people for space technology and the jobs of space? So we're going to have to retool our society to deal with both, you know, everything from climate change to regenerative medicine to next generation space travel. And it's happening now, not in some far future.
James, Amazon went down a few days ago and continued to have some problems. Everything seems to be fine now. But it took down a lot of websites on the internet. What happens when technology fails us when we've gotten this advanced?
Well, people have to get used to the fact that, you know, this is the early stages of the global innovation economy. Did you remember talking to your grandma about the internet that she had when she was growing up?
Nope.
No. Didn't happen, right? Because there was no internet when grandma grew up.
There were no calculators when grandma was growing up.
Exactly. I remember grandma would unplug the TV so it wouldn't blow up. computers and the internet and mobile technology, you know, virtual reality, I mean, these are things that have just been invented. There have been more, you know, technological innovations in the past, you know, 10 years than the previous 10,000 years. So we're living at an extraordinary time of very accelerated innovation. So are some of these technologies going to break? Are they going to break down? Sure, we're going to have identity theft. We're still going to have cyber attacks. We're still going to have things that don't work. I mean, I can tell you, I'll give you a bit of news that I've learned about that has not been at all really publicized, but about 2 weeks ago in Israel, the entire highway system in and around the main drag in Tel Aviv went down because the GPS platform that they use called Waze, which is similar to Google Maps, went ahead and had a glitch, so it closed down the highway. Look, you're going to have, just like we've had blackouts, and just like, you know, electricity goes off, these are new technologies. We're still experimenting. This is the early stage. This is like the Middle Ages for technology. We just invented this stuff, and it's still very young. We're all pioneers, and these technologies are going to, I'm surprised that they work as best as they do.
Well, you may be right about that. James, tell us a little bit about where you can get your book, Future Smart.
Well, my book, it can be available at bookstores around the world. You can also get it on Amazon or throughout, or CEO Reads. But Amazon's probably the best place to get it. You can download it or buy the book and get it no matter where you are, and you'll get a passport to the future. If you want to know what's next and find out for, you know, climate, work, technology, you really want to get a glimpse of how to get ready for all these challenges and trends, you read my book and you'll get my sense of what's next to the economy, and maybe, just maybe, be able to adapt faster and help you, your family, your friends, and your coworkers. You may be able to get a competitive edge in your personal and professional life as well.
And your businesses, too, because businesses, I think, really need to be kept abreast of what's going on in the world of digital and everything else, don't they?
Absolutely. Good point. So, you know, if you've got a business or you want to, you know, create a startup or you want to make a change or you just want to contribute to the company that you're with, or, you know, whether you start a new one or you're with an older one, you know, look, I would like to tell you that everybody's moving as fast as they should be about embracing digital technology.
They're not.
And you know what? I got to tell you, that's going to imperil it. You have a greater risk if your company is not embracing digital technology. And I mean, you know, mobile, analytics, cloud.
Let's talk about that. James, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to come back. We'll talk more about Future Smart, and let's open up the phone lines, too.